The following audio content is a talk from Convergence, a service for young adults at University Presbyterian Church in Seattle, Washington. For more information, please visit our website at upc.org/young-adults.
Well, hi. This is the first time I've been up this year, and I know most of you, but there's some of you that don't know me. My name's Dave, and I'm used to be a pastor for 6 years for college students. And actually went to college here at the UW and went to the Inn for my years here. And then went off to seminary, was a pastor in the Midwest for 6 years. And then got another degree and went and have been a therapist now for 7 years. And so I have had the privilege of working with John while he's been in here and partnering with him in so many ways. And so it's good to be here tonight. Let me just tell you, tonight we're continuing on with this series in Romans. And Romans, for those of you who've ever tried to read it all the way through, it is a book that in some ways you'll just sit there and go, oh, that is the clearest thing I've ever read in my life. And then you get to Romans about 9 and you go, I don't have a clue what Paul's talking about. And it gets really hazy for a while. And you just get this feeling like Paul's just writing as fast as he can. And he's just getting out some real heavy duty stuff. But what he's really trying to do is blow up this idea of what it means to walk a life of faith. He's trying to blow up this idea of what it means to be a follower of God. And he's really, it's a pretty revolutionary thing that he's doing. And so following it can be a task. But I really believe this. If we get it, it can really transform the way that you have viewed being a Christian from the time that you've been raised, whether you were raised in the church or not, and you had a perception of the church. Or whether you're raised in a place where that became what church is like. Paul comes, I think, at any age and comes in with Romans and boom, blows up what we know. And so I'm going to ask for you to kind of hang with me tonight. Now, let me see if we can do this. Nice. Okay, good job, Brenna. Thank you for that. All right. You know what? We got to read the passage first. Can you get to that? Nice. Read it with me, everybody. All right. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is true worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is. His good, pleasing, and perfect will. Let's read it one more time. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is true worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. One more time. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is true worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. Okay, good job. All right, can you put back up those four things? Okay. Tonight I want to talk about what Paul is talking about here is he is talking about a revolutionary way of looking at church. He's looking at a revolutionary way of looking at significance. He's looking at a revolutionary way of pleasing God and a revolutionary way of finding out what God's will is for your life. He's gonna talk about this in a way that for people back in this day, this would have been a complete anomaly for them. The way that they would have been raised, the surroundings that they would have come from, this would have been like, oh, wait, say that one more time. A revolutionary view of what church is. The first thing that Paul's going to talk about is shifting your definition of church. And the primary definition, if you go back, if you look in this, I'm going to read it from a slightly different translation here. He says, present your bodies as a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. That's the passage we're going to focus on. The first thing to get this revolutionary view of church, the first thing that he's going to talk about is this idea of shifting your definition of church from something you go to something that you bring and that you are. That simple. Something that you go to when someone asks you, where do you go to church? If you want to get revolutionary with Paul, you would say, Mars Hill, no. You would say, UPC, no. You would say, Bethany Community, no. You would say, I am the church. And they would look at you and go, heretic! And you'd go, no, no, no. Romans 12, go look it up. This is Paul's idea, is that there's this revolutionary idea that, and you think about it this way. If any of you have ever driven up to, anybody ever been up to Stevens Pass? All right. Along the line there, there's this row of towns like Gold Bar and Startup and these towns that are just great little places to go. I love them. But if you go through there, there's this, I can't remember which one. I was trying to remember which town it is. Somebody's going to know. You can see these little churches right along the road that are really awesome craft stores now. They sell stained glass windows and things and crafts, more crafts, pottery, lots of things like that. And they're beautiful church buildings. But the people somehow are gone. And so the question I was driving by them, I was like, is that a church anymore? Paul would say, absolutely not. It looks like a church. It's shaped like a church. At one point in time, it served to house the church. But it's no longer the church. Does that make sense? You, what God has done is taken this idea of a building and said, I'm moving in to you. So, Jewish people in that day and age, this would have been revolutionary. Why? Well, you come through the land of Egypt. When they were coming out of Egypt, and they come into the desert. In that time, what they were seeing was God as sort of this pillar. And they're seeing God in the distance. God was always distant. He's out there. When Moses goes up to the mountain, he meets with God, but then he comes back. The people don't really have access to God. There's this movement into the Canaan, and slowly over time, as they begin to kind of formalize their society, they start to realize we need a temple. We need some kind of a house, some kind of a building that people are going to look at and say, that's where God is. Otherwise, they look at us and they just see us as one more tribe. So they start and they build the building of buildings. And some of you have heard me talk about it. Some of you may know this, but just the way the temple was kind of organized, it was built in sort of concentric, getting smaller and smaller layers, where if you were, you know, anybody, you could come to the outside of it. If you were Jewish, you could come into the first ring. If you were a male, you could go to the next one. Female, sorry, you're barred. This is as far as you go. If you were a Pharisee or a religious ruler, you could go to the next one, and slowly, all the way into the very middle, which was called the Holy of Holies. And in that place, one person gets elected per year to go in there, and they thought in that specific place was the presence of God, which they call the Shekinah presence, which they believe that you go in there and it would be so powerful that they would literally tie a rope to your waist because it literally could knock you out, and they would want to be able to pull you back out in case you fell over. This was their idea. Well, this was viewed as something that was going to be permanent and lasting, and then all of a sudden, what happens? Well, given time, armies come over and just wreck it. And there's this sense of there being a real feeling of, okay, well, if there's no temple, well, then where's God now? So over time, they rebuild this thing. Nehemiah comes along, and there's this whole bit rebuilding process. And eventually, again, this idea of the temple system comes in. Well, Jesus is born into this time where the temple system is not only about worship, it's about sacrifice. And for everything you do, for a marriage, for a death, for some kind of a sin that you've committed, everything, for every event in life, there's a different kind of sacrifice, and it gets really, really specific. And in order to fulfill that sacrifice, you have to go buy the right sacrificial thing at the right sacrificial place. And that sets up a whole economy. And so Jesus is coming into this place where outside the circle, outside of the temple, you would have seen a marketplace all designed around this sacrificial system that you had to get exactly right. And this is one of the things that gets Jesus really angry. Because he's saying, look, there's a lot of people who can't afford this. There's a lot of people who can't afford this that even when they do this, they don't mean anything by it. It's just turned into a place where people are making their living, and it makes them furious. This is the thing where you see him come in and braid a whip and kick some tables over, and you're kind of going, Jesus, you're kind of losing it here. Gets him that mad. People talk about what gets Jesus angry, and I think sometimes we can take a look and we look biblically and say, some of the things we think Jesus gets really angry about, I don't see him kicking tables over. This gets him furious. This idea of a temple that's now, instead of bringing people in, it's keeping people out. Well, over time, what Paul is talking about is this whole, he takes this whole system on. And if you can imagine, if any of you have ever gone to your family and have tried to do something new, I don't think I'm going to be a lawyer. And they go, yes, you are. We've worked so hard for you to go to school so you could be a lawyer. Of course you're going to be a lawyer. You don't mean that, right? You're not going to be that. We love you, right? You're going to be a lawyer, right? That's hard. That's four people. Now imagine taking on an entire societal system. Paul's walking up to this thing and saying, guess what? The building is irrelevant. Because the moment the people move out, it's just a building. So you say, where do you go to church? And you say, UPC. The moment everybody leaves this building, it becomes, I don't know, law offices used for something. It's a building. It's electricity. It's plaster. It's cement. That's all it is. Anyone listening out there? Hopefully I don't get in trouble for saying that. Paul is looking at an entire system. And for those of you who have faced a system, maybe you're at work, you're looking at something saying, we need to do something different. And you can feel that subtle push against you saying, no, we do it this way. We've always done it this way. We always go. Churches, we show up at 9 o'clock, or if you're a late riser, you can come to the 11 o'clock. Or if you're really revolutionary, you can come on a Saturday night. Ooh-wee, crazy. Wednesday night, if you're from the Midwest. Yeah. That's where I worked for a long time. This is the idea of Paul looking at this entire system and saying, look, listen, God has made a big, huge move, and you've got to start shifting your idea of what church is. If you want a revolutionary view of church, you're going to start looking at it and saying, listen, God has looked at each one of us, each one of you, each one of you, collectively and individually, collectively and individually, collectively and individually, and says, I'm moving in. These walls that were so ornate that we spent years and years and lots of money making. Go to some of the largest churches. You can't believe it. State of the art, everything. Millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. And God says, I don't care. It's just a TV up there. I don't care. It's a sound system. I don't care. What I care about is you. And I'm moving in to you. Your flesh. You're willing to. Go like this with me. Just go like this. You feel it? Feel it? That flesh is the house of the church. That is the walls of the church. That is the cement. That is the plaster. That is the electricity. That is the diamond screen TV behind the pastor. That is everything. This is now the walls of the church. Where do you go to church? You are the church. You happen to congregate with the church at UBC. You happen to congregate with the church at Mars Hill. You happen to congregate with the church at Bethany Community. But make no mistake, Paul is saying the revolution that's taking place is that it used to be about the temple. It used to be about where you go. It used to be about how far you could get in or the ladder that you could climb inside this institution. He's saying that's done. It's done. It's done. In Jesus Christ on the cross, that sacrifice, everything changes. It's now you. The Spirit of God says, I'm moving into your body. I'm moving into you. I now live and breathe in you. Crazy. Now, I've got to tell you something. That challenges me. Because I can get really focused on how entertaining is the church. I can get focused on how inspired I get by the church. UBC. Mars Hill. Bethany. Do the sermons reach me? Does the music get me? do I walk in and feel the sense of wow? And we walk away and there's that sense of it not lasting. You don't carry that sense of wow, Diamond Vision TV screens by Wednesday. It's gone. True? What Paul is saying is, that's because that's not church. Church is you. Now that forces me to say, okay, well then, what happens when I go from here, when I wake up and I go to work, or when I go back to my family, or I go into that one group of friends that certain part of me comes out in? For me, it used to be rowing. When I rowed for years, I had a different vocabulary when I was with my rowing friends. It challenged me. Like, where's my sense of church? Somehow it just kind of disappears. Is that sense of, I don't think I got it. I don't think I got that everywhere I go, I am church. I am bringing church into any scenario I go to. It doesn't stop. Jesus doesn't say, you know what? I'm going to move in from 10 a.m. to 11:15 a.m. on Sunday morning, and then I'm going to move out so you can go and do whatever you're doing. He said, no, this is a permanent move. So from now on, who you are and what you bring is church, and it goes everywhere you go. So I got a challenge for you. How's it going? If I go to your community, can they tell that church has come into their midst? Can they tell that church has come into the community? Because you bring it, whether you want to or not. You bring it. Jesus moves in permanently and makes a home. Second thing, this shift, this revolutionary view of church, comes only with a shift that comes at the end of me, at the end of you. This kind of piggybacks on John's talk last week about mercy, which we were talking about. Mercy is kind of one of those churchy words. It's like, yeah, mercy, mercy, mercy. Thank you, Lord Jesus, for the mercy. Mercy, mercy, I get the mercy. But we don't really get the mercy until you've taken your talents and you have used them to the best of your ability and built what you can build, and you've done what you can do, and it's incredible, and you watch at the end of the day something happen and you see it crumble. Or the relationship that you've been praying for, and so you do all the right things, you learn the right words, you go buy the right clothes, you learn the right social skills, and lo and behold, the miracle of miracles, the person comes along, and you think, this is it, the divine answer to my prayer, and suddenly, boom, it starts to disintegrate, and you go, what happened? And at that point, you see, you have to look hard, you have to look deep inside, and it takes community, by the way, a community that knows you. Why I'm a big, big, big believer in groups. Because it takes time for a group of people, somebody that knows you and can tell you the things that are a part of you, that if I take away your guitar and your voice, that still make Kyle the person that I would come to for sure. And trust that if I have a problem, he will stop what he's doing and he will listen to me with everything he has. That's what will never go away from Kyle, for sure. Would you say that's true? That's what Kyle brings. Does that make sense? What is it in you? Now, here's my belief, and I've been preaching this since I was 23 years old. Is that I believe every single one of you has something like this in you. Everyone. There's not one person in this room that was made on accident that doesn't have something on purpose by the hand of God put in there that transcends the skill you have, that transcends how you make your living. It's something that if I were to put you in a hospital bed, sit down, I would still start to feel it. I would still get it. And maybe that's your ability to understand the pain of another person. Maybe that's your ability to see the good. Maybe that's your ability to take somebody's side, to be protective. I don't know what it is, but you have it. Do you know what it is? If I were to ask you right now to write it down, how fast could you do it? I think it takes a community that's looking around and looks you in the eye and gets to know you and to start feeling. What is that thing that is you? that after all the stuff that wows the crowd, or whatever it was that your family put up as the invisible bar, and don't tell me you don't have it, that said you'll be okay if you only do what? If you only act like what? It's that thing that when all that stuff falls apart, all that stuff falls away, that still essentially the gift that God gave you to give to people. What is it? John, if he never has this job again, if everything else goes away, if this ministry crumbles, I'll tell you, John will still be one person that will always look for what's authentic. Always. He will always be looking for what is real. He can't stop. That is his gift. It's one of them. Do you know what yours is? Are you in a community of people that can look you in the eye and name it? There's got to be a shift, because only when you're come to the place where you're at your end and all the things that wowed the crowd are gone, can you start to see God take this little thing, this little seed of yours, and work. You take church, it's not where you go, it's who you are. It's what you bring that is being used by God when you are so exhausted, when you are so broken down, when you think, oh, God can't use me. Not after what I did last night. Not after that thing I said I'd never do again that I did again. And it does, it works. You bring it and you say, Lord, here it is. If you can use this little thing I got, and it's all I got, take it, multiply it. It's like Jesus on the side of the hill when people gather around and the little boy comes up with the fish. And Peter holds it up and says, we got six. And there's 6,000 people there. Jesus says, I can work with that. It's like, what's that small thing in you that God can start taking and multiplying and that it actually feeds people? Have you got to the end of that? Have you gotten to your end yet? Or are you still in the place? Problem with your 20s is I think that your 20s is oftentimes the decade of proving yourself. The 20s is the time where you got to go out and kind of test your mettle and kind of see if you can do it, whatever it was. And a lot of you will do it and burn out from it right around the ages of 29 to 32. There's actually a lot of studies right now that they're saying that's the new age of the midlife crisis. It's true. Get ready. Once that hits, right on the other side is a depression like you cannot imagine. I went through it. Literally flattened. Literally, the only time in my life, this is just being real with you, only time in my life where I was ever questioned whether or not I really wanted to live. That flattened. Started working at a place called REI. No title, no nothing. You guys have heard me tell it. Green vest and a 20-year-old telling me when I should take my break. And finding that in the morning, and this is, you guys, when I tell stories where I don't mean to put myself up here, this is where I'm talking. This was me at my end. And all I did was show up. And I remember starting to have conversations with people who were struggling with their sexuality. Never talked about it before. They didn't know where I came from. They didn't know what I had done in my life. They didn't know. Didn't tell anybody. And I would find these conversations happening. Because the gift that I'm going to bring, for sure, is that no matter where you are, I'm going to be able to put myself in your shoes and feel the weight of your story, for sure. And that'll happen no matter where I am, no matter what I'm doing, no matter what my job. That's true. And that was the place where I bring church into REI, and I got nothing, because I'm at the end of me. I know what I can build. I built a ministry. I know how to do that. When all that goes, this is all I got. You want a revolutionary view of church? The first thing is, it's not where you go to. It's who you are and what you bring. Second thing is, it's at the end of you. Because that's the place where you know it's God working through that core thing that he put in you. Third thing is you have to, there's a shift from a spectator to actor. What this means is that you don't go someplace and watch a speaker. It doesn't mean that you go someplace and listen to music and evaluate it. It means that you start to see the world as a place that God wants to go and reach. Do you see Seattle like that? I do. Do you ever stop to think about right now, seriously, right now, there are apartment buildings right now with people your age right now who think right now that there is nobody that one cares about their story, that do not know for sure if there's a God that made them on purpose right now, that are dipping into substances, that are engaging in activities, that are searching desperately for something, is some way to connect. And each time they do it, it's like drinking salt water. The more they drink, the more dehydrated they get. Do you know that? Do you care about it? Do you start to see that as we shift our idea from church being a place we go to a thing that we bring and that we are, that we give when we've reached our end, that we go to a city, to a world that God is trying to reach? He's saying, I need church to reach the world. That's how I do it. That's how I work. I take church and go into the world. That was the big shift from the Old Testament to the New Testament. In the Old Testament, they used the prophet model. The prophet would come and have the one word, and it would be an inspiring person, and they would come with a message. Usually the message wasn't listened to, but it would be about this, bells and whistles and all this kind of stuff. Someone would come into the midst and be a prophet. All the other people are there to watch the prophet. Do they do anything with it? No. They got to go out and kind of live nice. Don't do this, do that, do this twice, tithe that. But basically, it's about the prophet. We go to listen to the prophet to find out what we're supposed to be doing. We go to the prophet to find our local, our weekly inspiration. We go to the prophet to find out what God is up to. The discipleship move, Jesus comes in, takes 12 people, and he says, I want to start talking to Peter. You are a fisherman. I'm going to start making you a fisher of men. I'm going to take that core thing that no matter where you are, Peter, you are always going to be going looking out at the expanse, and you're always going to go, how can we get him? That's going to be Peter no matter where he goes. He starts to take that. He goes, I can use that. I'm going to use that to reach the world. I'm going to use church to reach the world. That is you. What is it that God calls you out of the crowd and says, I need that to go reach the world? There is a city right now that needs church. I don't mean they need UPC. I don't mean they need Mars Hill. I mean they need God living inside your flesh, going once you've reached your end and giving that. That's what's going to reach them. That's where you start to participate. So you go to church and it's no longer about how entertaining it was. You go to church and it's no longer about how inspiring it was. You go to church, you are church. And I'll tell you what, when you take what God put in you, that thing that's not going away, that thing that will come out no matter what, wherever you are, at your end, you will be inspiring. I promise. Your story will be inspiring. It's not a guitar piece that's going to inspire. Your life inspires. And that is going to be what reaches people. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's what Paul is getting at. He's getting this revolutionary idea of moving away from this system, this gigantic building, this gigantic way of being. And he's saying, I'm taking this whole thing and I'm blowing it apart. And I'm asking for a major shift for you to start really realizing that God moved into you. That yes, you have these amazing gifts and talents, but I'm talking about when those fall away, what are the things, those core things in you that come out? When you don't have a position, when you don't have an income, when you don't have the full capacity to do all the things you want because you suffer from anxiety or depression. And all that comes together. What Paul says, this is your spiritual act of worship. This is it. It's not about raising your hands. You can raise your hands. It's fair. But please don't confuse that, Paul says. Don't confuse this with what God is asking for your spiritual act of worship. Go back and read through Isaiah and watch how God says, all of this stuff doesn't matter to me. I can take this and throw it away like a dirty rag. What I want is your heart. I want you to be church. Go out into the world. Take it wherever you go and let that start to manifest itself in your busy, busy workplace where nobody has the time to stop and listen to somebody. What do? When you have a group of people that are talking about women in a certain way, what do you do, guys? Do you stay silent? Oh boy, especially for those of you guys who have the gift of speaking up and you're not. Why don't you speak up? For those of you who have the gift of seeing how something can be turned towards being a blessing to the planet instead of taking from the planet, then you have that gift of seeing strategy. No matter where you go, you'll always think strategically. Why are you not doing it? Be church. Let that thing start to emerge and let it start to change the world. Let people see it and be inspired. And at the end of the day, realize that this is what Paul says is your spiritual act of worship. Even if you don't show up on Sunday to the building where other people who are church are gathering. Because you're getting rest. And what Paul says at the end of the day, this is what pleases God. And I have this vision. I have this vision of God looking at you and seeing, because it's going to take courage. It's going to take courage. It's going to take prayer. It'll force you to pray like you've never prayed. Lord, I'm scared. I'm scared of losing my job. If I am church in this place, I'm scared. I need your strength. Lord, I'm afraid that if I start actually using this core thing of mine with these people, I don't know what's going to happen. You will have to pray. You will have to submit. You will have to get down on your knees and say, Lord, by your strength, let it happen. That God says, yeah, you inspire me. So it says, this is what's pleasing to God. You get the applause of one. Maybe not the applause of the thousands. Maybe not the applause of the multitudes. Maybe not the acceptance of all the people that you wish were giving you the acceptance. Maybe not even the applause of yourself. Sometimes you know you can be hard on yourself. But you get God going, I get it. That was hard. Way to be church. Way to be church. Go be church. This makes me so happy. I don't do this perfectly. I'll tell you how I do it. In my work, before I see people, most of the time, I'll usually go walk, I'll go to the bathroom or something like that. I'll be coming down the hall, and I literally shake my arms out, and I literally am in a place where I cannot make a person call me. I can't. It's out of my hands. I can't make a person show up. I can't make a person have the income to be able to do it. I can't give them the mental energy that it's going to take for them to make a change in their life. I can't do any of that. I feel so completely helpless. In ministry, I didn't. Because I knew how to build certain things and I had a solid income. I knew how to do that. So there was things I didn't have that feeling. In this work I have a feeling of I can't control any of this. And so I have to pray. And there's sometimes where maybe I wasn't responsible with my sleep, so I'm tired. Or maybe I've worked too many hours and so I'm tired. And there's this feeling of, Lord, here's all I got is this little thing you put in me, which is that I'm going to get somebody's story and feel the weight of it. That's all I got. You're going to have to do everything else. That's it. And that's what I pray. I pray and I shake my hands out and I walk into the room. And in my mind, I've just stepped into a very sacred place and I'm bringing church with me. Does that make sense? That's how I do it. And that has come because I know what it's like to be at my end. I know that I can't create change in anybody's life. How about you? What's it going to look like practically? Not just theoretically, but practically tomorrow when you walk into your work, when you walk into your family, when you walk into your relationships. Can you visualize it right now? What will it look like? What prayer will you have to say because you got nothing else to do but pray? Do you know what it is that you bring that is totally unique to you, that will be you no matter what happens? Can you visualize it? Can you make a commitment right now in your own heart tomorrow to say, Lord, if it is up to you, I give you my full consent to bring church to be church in the different arenas and spheres of influence that I go to? That's Paul's revolution. That's a tearing down of the old temple and a building of the new. Are you with me? Thumbs up if you understand what I'm talking about. Let's pray. God, thanks so much. I do pray that this sinks in. I pray, Lord, for a city right now where there are people who feel so desperately alone, whose view of the church is of a place that is irrelevant, that is trying to mimic modern everything else, modern entertainment, that feels exclusive, like a country club, like a ladder of leadership that they can only hope to get on, or if they don't, they're going to be excluded, that feels hypocritical. I pray, Lord, for a city that will see, if only starting from 120 people in this room, I pray for a people that will go out and be church. I don't know where you'll take them. I don't know who will see it and who will hear it. But I believe that is your way of reaching the world. Lord, we don't know how to do it. We surrender everything we are to you. We surrender who we are to you. We lift it back, we pray, and we trust that if you, as you see this, you trust that we are worshiping you in this process and that this makes you happy. All God's people said,
yeah.
Amen.